I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson.
I'm Dr. Richard Marshall.
Richard, it is 8 o'clock. We made it this week. So if anybody was listening last week, we were joking about it because we started at 8:06 last week.
That's right. We were late.
And we said that we would make it at 8 o'clock this week.
We are here on the hour.
Perfect timing. Perfect timing. So,
and it's a Friday.
That's right.
Do you have soccer this weekend?
We do. We do have soccer this weekend. Just tomorrow. My son has a game tomorrow evening, and then after that, we're going to go watch the University of South Florida play against the Tampa Bay Rowdies. And then on Sunday...
Are you going to be here tomorrow?
...is Orlando City's first...
Oh, they're inaugural.
...season... first match of the season.
They're still in the old stadium, right?
Yeah, they're at the Citrus Bowl still. So.
Okay.
But that is very exciting.
Are you coming in tomorrow morning?
Yeah, I'll be here for a little bit.
All right, good. See you in the morning.
So...
Friday... The 4th of March. First Friday.
First Friday.
Yeah. I think I'll take my sister downtown.
I just got a tweet about downtown Lakeland today.
I think we'll go down there. And the weather's good.
Yeah.
I think maybe we're done with winter.
Maybe.
Hopefully.
Maybe. Well, we don't have any tournaments. It just seems like every time we were going to have a tournament.
That's right. It's always
bad weather. That's when the weather got bad again. So we don't have any more tournaments scheduled.
That's why the weather's good.
We are more reliable than Phil.
That's why you buy a generator. You buy a generator. If you live in Florida, you buy a generator, and then you won't have any hurricanes.
Oh, that's good.
And
that's
the more expensive the generator is, the less likely the hurricane is.
There's an inverse relationship.
Right.
All right. Well,
what's the topic today?
So today's podcast, I've called it For the Kids.
Oh.
And even though that's what I called it, I sort of admit that it could be a little bit misleading. Let me tell you what we're going to talk about.
But that's actually good, because we discussed this. I know what the topic is today.
Yeah.
Because we discussed these topics during the week and sort of refined it as the week goes on. And so you entitled it For the Kids.
For the Kids.
Okay. That's a good that's good, actually.
And the reason that we're doing this podcast, or we're doing this topic, really, is because this is a very common thing that we talk to people about, and mm-hmm. a very common thing that people struggle with. And this is, it's in regards to divorce.
Right.
Okay. Some statistics I found is that about 25% of troubled marriages actually stay together because of that excuse for the kids. And so we're going to talk about that today, and hopefully give you a few strategies and things to at least think about.
Yeah, sadly, divorce is one of those things that we spend a considerable amount of time here working on, talking about, trying to figure out, and trying to give people the best advice we can on admittedly what is a very, very difficult topic.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So let's start out talking about some things statistics wise. And I'm just going to throw these out there quick because I really don't want to spend too much time talking about this. I'd like to get to the real meat of this stuff.
But when we talk about what we're going to talk about today is, should couples stay together? I mean, is that the issue?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the pros and cons of staying in a troubled relationship for the children.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
So, you know, a lot of these statistics are not surprising. I think everybody, or not everybody, but a lot of people know that about 50% of first marriages end in divorce now.
It's a little bit higher in Polk County. Did you know that?
Right.
It's almost 70%.
Right. Regionally, there are some significant differences. Right. But overall, I think that it ranges somewhere between 40 and 50%.
Right.
Now, second marriages... it goes up to about 60%.
Higher, right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So I found an interesting observation that was written about the statistics. And divorce, in some regions, divorce is more common than marriage.
Yes.
There are more divorces than there are marriages.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a pretty interesting...
And it's funny, yet everybody keeps getting married. You know, there seems mm-hmm. to be that time in your life when, you know, it seems to be the right time to get married. We see that in certain age groups. People keep getting married despite the fact that about half of them aren't going to make it.
Right, right. And we'll talk about how that relates to some of this anyways, mm-hmm. because in some ways it's that impulsivity and that... not really thinking for that absence of forethought, perhaps,
right.
mm-hmm. that is contributing to some of that. So, but when we think about why people get divorced, there's all kinds of things out there. And if you go to Google and you type in, you know, why do people get divorced? You're going to get all kinds of things.
Sure.
I found this one thing that is from the Certified Divorce Financial Analysis Survey.
Wow.
It sounds very fancy.
Mm-hmm.
But what they found in their survey of almost 2,000 people, couples, they found that 43% became divorced because of, quote, general incompatibility. And that's obviously a very general
whatever that is
catch-all type
right.
of thing. But if we look at, you know, if we kind of accumulate information from different sources, what we're really talking about is, you know, people who feel like their spouse changed as time passed, general disagreements, they can't agree on how they should do things or not do things, the absence of sort of their own identity. You know, a lot of people get out of marriages because they're not themselves anymore. They're you know, have changed. 28% divorce because of infidelity. 28%.
So that's a smaller number.
Yeah. 22% because of financial issues.
Right.
And then it really drops off after that. 5.8% was because of emotional and physical abuse, and then less than a percent, right about a half a percent, was because of parenting issues. Mm-hmm. One parent disagreed.
That's not a big deal.
So it's not really that much of an issue. And I think that that's the first place where we need to say something.
What was the first category?
General incompatibility.
So that could be anything.
Yeah, that's just a big catch-all type of thing.
Okay. Including parenting.
But the reason that I pulled those out is because one would assume, you know, they didn't go through what all the general incompatibility stuff could be, but one would assume that if they pulled parenting issues out as a separate category, that wasn't included there.
Right.
One of the reasons that it's important to mention this is because we talk to kids about this a lot. You know, when parents go through a divorce, many kids, it is cliche, though it is absolutely correct, many kids blame themselves.
Yes.
They look at, you know, if I wouldn't have gotten in trouble, if I would have just listened better, if I would have just done what Dad wanted me to, he wouldn't have left, you know. And so kids maintain some of those perspectives.
Right.
And again, really, and that's, you know, that half a percent is parenting issues. It's not even kid issues. It's parenting issues. So, you know, I think it's really important to mention that, you know, we have to work with that, with kids on that, because despite those kinds of statistics, kids still believe that they're to blame.
That it's somehow their fault.
Right.
And also that if they work hard enough, they can keep their parents together.
Right. They take on the obligation that...
Of keeping
them. And we're going to get to that in a few minutes when we talk about staying together for the kids.
Right.
I mean, I think a lot of parents sort of force themselves to be delusional that their kids don't know that that's what's happening.
Right.
And so the kids become feel that it's part of their obligation to keep everybody together.
That's right.
So with those statistics, I mean, and again, if you look at different sources, you're going to see lots of different things about why people get divorced and that kind of stuff. But that's sort of the general consensus. Some of the things that go along with divorce is maybe some of the stuff that you were talking about a minute ago. You know, people who get married very young are more likely to get divorced. Those with lower education or lower income are more likely to get divorced. Interestingly, those who live together before they're married or have kids before they're married tend to get divorced more often, which I think is interesting because you would think then you sort of...
trial.
Right. You had that trial and you had that time where you were getting to know each other before you had the quote-unquote obligation of marriage. And
Not so.
Okay. No religious affiliation. If a person does not have a religious affiliation, they're more likely
to get divorced.
If you come from a divorced family, feelings of insecurity, those kinds of things, all are sort of correlated with getting a divorce. So all of that to say, there are a lot of factors that go into this, and there's no real way to predict with any significant confidence that a couple is going to make it or not going to make
it. Right. You don't know.
And now, there are some things that increase the probability, such as, you know, premarital counseling, marriage counseling itself.
That predict the possibility of...
that increase the probability of staying together.
Oh, staying together.
Being able to work out problems, being able to work out issues, those kinds of things. Now, certainly with that sort of as the background, the purpose of this podcast, the purpose of our topic today is really to talk about why people stay together, even if they're troubled. Because let's be honest, some marriages are troubled.
Right.
You know, some marriages just, for lack of a better word, just are not healthy.
Right.
And so, you know, everybody in the marriage, the husband and the wife, are unhappy. They're angry. They're resentful. They're frustrated. And the entire environment is just toxic.
Toxic. It's probably the right word.
And so we have to recognize that, you know, there are many marriages that that are troubled, that are problems, that
it's
are
a
not
very
healthy.
It's a very difficult. I've often said that the most difficult thing I do is to maintain a marriage. I mean, I think it's a very difficult thing for people to do. You have to be incredibly patient. You have to be incredibly charitable. We don't always feel like being patient. We don't always feel like being charitable. It's a very difficult thing to do to maintain a healthy, honest, active, committed relationship for 10 years or 20 years or 40 years or 50 years.
Right.
You know, it's not it's not an easy thing to do.
Absolutely. And when you consider factors like getting married early, you know, those who get married when they're 17, 18 years old.
Oh my.
And you know, they're getting into relationships that they really, you know, at an age and at a developmental level where they're not really able to predict where things are going to go.
They don't know themselves well enough.
Right.
You know, and that's, you know, we parents who have teenagers, we know that our teenage children, our teenagers, don't know themselves well enough yet to know what they want in a partner.
Right.
We reject that when we're teenagers. We say, no, this is who I am.
Right.
This is true love. This is the person I want to spend the rest of my life with. And we really do feel that way when we're teenagers.
Right.
Although that's not the case because we keep learning things about ourselves well into our 20s and even into our 30s.
Right.
But marriage is usually something that occurs prior to age 30.
Right. And so when we have some of those other factors, we know that we have to be on the lookout and watchful for possible problems that could contribute to or lead to divorce and problems in the relationship. Let's talk a little bit about why people oppose divorce. So why would a couple who's having problems stay together?
Right.
And that research, that information is very interesting to me. And the reason that it's interesting is because the reasons vary pretty greatly. Certainly, there are those who have religious views that, you know, divorce is, you know, marriage is a vow that is before God. And, you know, to break that vow,
for better or for worse, really means no matter what.
And for many of those people, it is literally seen as a sin to get divorced. And so despite anything that's going on, these people tend to stay together. So religious views is certainly a major aspect of why troubled marriages stay together. Another is what I'm just going to sort of a broad category like general incompatibility. I'm going to create another general category called learned helplessness. And the reason that I'm going to use that term is because I think that a lot of times people stay in marriages because they just don't think they can get any better. They may feel like they'll never have another partner. They may feel like they're not good enough to be able to make it on their own. They may just be simply resigned to being unhappy. And we know that a lot of people do that, and a lot of people live their life in that way. They just admit and just live a life that they're going to be unhappy. So this learned helplessness is an aspect that I think that we in our clinic, we work on a lot, especially with women in abusive relationships, women who are in relationships where they're being emotionally abused or physically abused. Women in those situations oftentimes have a really difficult time escaping and getting themselves to safety. Not because they can't necessarily, because there are certainly ways to do that, but because they just don't see that as a truly viable option because, you know, their husband, the abuser, takes care of them, takes care of the kids. You know, it's not so bad all the time, those kinds of things. And people in those kinds of situations certainly use those arguments as a rationale for staying in the relationship that probably should have ended a long time ago. And then, of course, the other piece of that, though, would probably be a different category, is fear. A lot of people are just simply afraid of ending a relationship, again, especially an abusive relationship. A third category is the financial category, because people, you know, a lot of times people stay together just because they can't afford to be apart. They can't afford to, you know, they can't afford two houses. They, you know, the marriage consists of just one income, and so if the wife leaves or the husband leaves, then the one without the income, the one that's not working, is just not viably financially viable.
It's a huge consideration, because if you split a household, that means you have two rents or two mortgages, right, or two something.
It doubles overhead,
and many people just can't afford.
Right.
I mean, you often hear that. I can't afford to get divorced.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I've heard of people who have been separated from their spouse for 10 years.
Right.
Well, and you say, well, and they're both in other relationships and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And you say, why haven't you got a divorce? I just can't afford it.
Can't afford it. Well, first of all.
So that's affording the actual legal process.
The legal process of divorce is expensive, but after the legal process is over, now you have two households.
Right.
Somebody has to support two households. Yeah. And in many families, if you don't have a two income family, then that one person now has to support two households.
Right, right, right. So getting to the one that we're really going to spend time talking about today, as I said earlier, one in four, or about 25% of troubled marriages stay together for the kids.
And that's the reason. They're doing it for the children.
The reasoning is they're staying for the children. And I think the way that I'd like to start out this part of the conversation today is to talk about some of the pros and cons to that perspective. You know, with all that we just said, there are certainly some pros to that perspective, that pros to that decision. We were just talking about financial issues. You know, absolutely, if to get separated and then become divorced, is going to create such a financial hardship that the child's quality of life, their opportunities for doing things, because, you know, especially when you think about, you know, I guess it's important across the developmental span, but, you know, even when you're thinking about teenagers and they're doing things, they're involved in activities that's going to help them go to college and provide for them in the future. Mm-hmm. And to get divorced would mean that they would have to stop doing those things. I think that,
and we all know children and teenagers and young adults who have been affected that way.
Right.
We frequently will see families and, well, she used to do competitive cheer, but we can't afford it since the divorce because we don't have that $300 or $400 a month that it takes. Or you have teenagers who are involved in sport, like travel baseball teams, where, you know, the equipment is expensive and the dues are expensive and you have to get hotel rooms and you just can't afford it. We know other students who have had to drop out of college because their parents have gotten divorced.
Right.
Certainly, they're across the across childhood and adolescence, there are many interruptions that are created by a divorce because of a lack of income.
Right. So having some financial stability certainly, or ensuring financial stability, I suppose you could say, certainly is a pro if that is used to say, well, this is why we should stay together.
And you hear parents saying it all the time. Yeah, I would like to leave my husband, but I don't want it to affect my kids, and my kids are going to have to drop out of their activities. They can't go to summer camp anymore. They can't go visiting the relatives. We can't take, you know, they will pay too high a price. So I will sacrifice, stay in an unhealthy relationship so that my children don't suffer.
Right.
It's a normal parental reaction.
Right, right. So another reason that, I guess, viable reason for staying in an unhealthy relationship is consistency. You know, a lot of times, you know, we meet people who are in unhealthy relationships, but to be honest, the relationship has been just as unhealthy for the past 10 or 15 years.
Right.
And so it's not that it's really a new thing. Perhaps for the husband or the wife who is frustrated with it, they're just reaching their tipping point, and it's just, okay, I don't want to, you know, this happens certainly as parents reach the age of 40, or we're approaching middle age, we really sit back a little bit more alertly and say, is this really how I want to live the rest of my life?
That's right.
And when we do that, you know, that sort of creates a restlessness. But to say, well, you know, I'm going to stick it out until the kids are 18 because this is just what we're used to right now. It maintains some consistency for the kids. They don't have to have a big shift in their schools that they go to or their expectations. I think that is perhaps an appropriate way to think about it, especially if there's no abuse or anything like that going on. That's sort of a different issue. But, you know, maintaining consistency is, I think, a pro when it comes to sticking out a troubled relationship.
That's right, because your schedule, the life you knew before the divorce, ceases to exist.
Right.
Because with forced visitation, I say forced visitation because typically it's court ordered.
Right.
Weekends now are spoken for.
Right.
And you don't have a choice. These are court orders that you have to follow, or you get into some serious trouble. So, you know, if the visitation schedule is you're going to be with your father every Wednesday, then if your father wants to see you, that's what's going to happen.
Right.
And you might have to miss cheerleading practice or football practice or something. Same with the weekend. You know, you may want to be with your friends on the weekend, but your father, who lives in a different part of town, has a right for you to be with him on the weekend.
Right.
And so it does create a major disruption in what had been a fairly routine schedule.
Right. Right. So I think that's an important consideration that people, I think, appropriately consider when they're thinking about this.
I mean, it happens. You know, if a parent moves out of a house and into an apartment, which is typically the first step,
right.
I mean, unless it's a family of considerable means, typically one of the parents has to move into a small apartment. And so the kids are leaving their home and pool and friends, and they're going to an apartment where they maybe sleep on the sofa or on the floor or on an air mattress.
Right.
It's a very different existence.
Right.
You know, and many parents say, I don't want to do that to my children. I don't want to upset their schedule and their routine and their life.
And this is especially important for kids with particular developmental concerns. So those with on the autism spectrum and kids with ADHD, you know, those kids who thrive off of consistency, it's really difficult for them.
Right.
A third, though admittedly related to keeping a consistent schedule, is really just the absence of other significant changes.
Right.
Kids who, when you kind of alluded to it a minute ago, when we go through a divorce, there are major changes that happen in your life. You may have to change schools. You may have to, you mentioned the apartments. You may have to move into a new house. You know, kids and adults are often troubled when they leave the home that they've lived in for 15 years.
That's right.
So just those major changes would be a deterrent from going through a divorce. Again, especially when the kids are still school aged.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm. So you know, there are certainly variables that should be considered. When a couple is looking at the possibility of divorce, there are certainly factors that should be considered before you just sort of jump the gun and just jump into it and just do it. There are those parents who are very impulsive with pulling the trigger for divorce. Oftentimes, those are the same people who were very quick to pull the trigger to get married.
Yeah.
I've met people who, you know, married somebody 10 days after first meeting them. And then to hear that they got divorced last weekend or that, you know.
2 months later.
Yeah, that's not surprising either. So, but when you're thinking about it and when you have, you know, children, I think that those are appropriate things to think about.
And we have to remember when you're... I like this notion of don't be too impulsive. Do give the children some consideration.
Right.
I know that we're all anxious to get to the question of should we stay together for the children? We're getting to that. But when you think about your children, you have to remember that at different ages, they're going to have different struggles with divorce.
Right.
And so young children don't really understand divorce, and they do blame themselves. Elementary school children are starting to struggle with other issues, but it really affects teenagers.
Right.
You know, and teenagers go, because teenagers are really struggling to discover who they are, and they rely on their parents. They watch their parents, and they learn their role in society typically from their parents. And so teenagers are struggling with their own identity issues, sexual identity, sexual identification. What kind of a person am I going to be? Am I going to go to college? Am I going to be a dropout? All those decisions, you're working that out during your teenage years. And if you have a divorce that occurs, it sort of causes that apple cart to get upset.
Okay? Right, right.
And that it compounds. I mean, Eric Erickson, the great psychologist, personality theorist, told us that at every age we have a struggle. You know, you can't avoid these struggles that we go through. So every age has its struggle, and divorce makes that struggle more difficult.
Right.
So it doesn't matter what age it is. So you have to think about your kids at their age level. And if you have kids, if you have a preschooler and a teenager and a college student, you're going to be dealing with three different problems. Each
right.
kid's going to work it out in their age appropriate way.
Right, right. Well, let's go ahead and move over to the real problems with staying together for the kids.
Right.
Because I think
that's... You mean the disadvantages.
The disadvantages. Okay. This is the real concern. And, you know, when we talk to people who say that they're staying together for the children, invariably, they tend to cite or at least mention, well, it's better for the kids to grow up in a two-parent household. It's better for them to have both parents together while they're growing up, and those kinds of things. And while the research does suggest that, what the research also suggests is that that's really only as powerful as the health of the relationship. When
that's
it's
right.
a healthy relationship, that's great. And in fact, this is going to ruffle a few feathers, I think. In fact, the research talks about a two-parent household. Two-parent. Not a husband and a wife, two parents. So if it's a homosexual couple, research suggests that having two parents there is an important good thing
right.
when the parents get along. Two caregivers, it could be a grandparents, it could be aunts and uncles, it could be mother and father, it could be mother and stepfather, it could be lots of different arrangements, non-traditional arrangements. But having the two parents there is beneficial to the child. However, it is directly related to the health of those parents' relationship.
And I'd like to underline that, because several years ago there was a major study done on this issue. It was
mm-hmm.
reported in Time magazine and everywhere, made the popular press. And the idea was, should we stay together for the children? And their conclusion was, yeah, you ought to tough it out because kids need two people in the house. But what was forgotten is, yes, if those two people are getting along, if they can peacefully coexist. The problem is, if your relationship is unraveling, chances of you peacefully coexisting
right.
and creating a healthy, and remember, you're modeling for your children. You're not just talking to them, you're modeling for them.
Yeah,
and if they're not seeing something healthy, then it doesn't matter how many adults are in the household
right.
that are...
Yeah. So I mean, if we think about some of the things that parents do to cope with their unhappiness,
right.
but keep themselves together, you know, the the father starts sleeping on the couch. Well, if you think that the child doesn't recognize that, you're sort of putting the blinders on yourself. If you begin sleeping in the child's room, if you begin sleeping in the guest room, if you know all of these things are absolutely noticed by the child, and for them to go for you to assume that the child doesn't recognize any of those things, and that oh well, you know, as long as we're together, it's fine. That argument does not hold.
And the other thing kids are doing is they're going to their friends' houses and they're going to relatives' houses.
Right.
And they're watching other couples. And don't forget, when your child is visiting her friends, chances are those parents are going to be on their best behavior
right.
while she's there. Because they have a guest in the house. So whether she's seeing an accurate view of the family or not, she doesn't know that. Your child doesn't know that. They are seeing two parents who seem to get along really well.
Right.
And she's comparing what she's seeing at her friend's house to what she's seeing at her house.
Right.
So there's a direct comparison.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So kids know when you're unhappy.
Even young children.
Even young children know when you're unhappy. So let's resist the urge to again put those self-imposed blinders on and say, oh, well, you know, they don't know. You know, how many times have we heard parents and, you know, later attorneys say, well, the kids don't know anything that's going on. Well, you know.
We have these conversations in private.
Right.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah. And, it doesn't matter. It happens. They know.
They're going to know.
Right. And so deal with it. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess is what it comes down to. So, okay. So yeah.
Well, not only do they know, and as a parent who's in a difficult relationship, your children know, and it's your obligation to deal with that, with
right.
what they know and how they're dealing with it.
Right.
Because
right.
they still are your obligation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the first big concern then is the fact that, you know, you're not going to pull the wool over their eyes completely.
Right.
They're going to know that it's unhappy. So they're going to recognize mm-hmm. that it's an unhealthy relationship.
That's right.
And to your point from a few minutes ago, what this leads to is another major concern that I have. And that is kids model future relationships
right.
on the relationship they see when they're growing up.
They internalize what they see. They internalize what they're observing. And that's how they're going to parent when they get older. We
right.
parent generally the way our parents parented us.
So when they see, or when it is normalized
right.
that parents don't sleep in the same room, parents don't do things together, parents don't agree on anything, we have to have different dinner times because we're going to eat at this time with mom, but then dad's going to do this and dad's coming home later and later. That influences how kids believe that relationships are supposed to work.
I had a patient not long ago whose father, I think it was the father, his job would take him out of the country for extended periods mm-hmm. of time, sometimes for months at a time. And so she grew up with her father gone a portion of each year,
right.
Doing different projects. I think he was a contractor, and he would get into these building projects in the Middle East or in Europe or in China, and so he would be gone for months at a time. And it was perfectly normal for this when this girl was growing up, to be she had a father, but he wasn't there.
Right.
And so she was married, and they were struggling because she didn't see anything wrong with going out or going on vacation by herself because
right.
she watched her parents live this separate life. And so
right.
she was sort of modeling and her husband was concerned because he wanted to spend more time with her and she didn't feel any need.
Right.
You know, it seemed perfectly normal for her to be without her husband because she saw her mother without her husband.
Right. And we interestingly connect this very easily in abusive relationships. I mean, we see this all the time
yeah.
where especially girls, but boys also, who grow up in the midst of domestic violence, they tend to either become abusers when they grow up or they become abused.
They get abused, right.
When they grow
one
up.
The other.
Because that is just what has been modeled for them. That is
right.
the basis for what they see
mm-hmm.
as a typical relationship.
Right.
So
right.
So we have to recognize that, and we have to understand that, you know, not only do they know, but they're modeling, they're creating a template for relationships based upon what they see in their parents.
That's right. That's right. And they're learning how to parent, whether you intend for them to learn it or not.
Right.
Keep that in mind.
Right. Another issue is that, you know, when parents tend to, again, sort of cite some of that research that says, hey, it's better for kids to grow up in a two-parent household. You know, we then talk about other research that says, you know, that while that is the case, it's sort of the converse for kids who grow up in tense, unhappy, struggling families. Mm-hmm. You know, kids who grow up in those really they don't do so well.
No.
They really struggle. They have an increased risk for emotional and anxiety disorders. They have an increase in depression. They have an increase in acting out, disruptive behaviors. Because, again, you know, I keep going back to this, but it's, you know, kids know.
Right.
They can sense it. They can feel it. They know that there are these issues in the home, and despite all of our work to mask it or to hide it or to pretend it away, mm-hmm. it's there.
Well, and one of the classics is, well, we don't argue in front of the children, but if you go into their homes, you see that they don't speak to each other either.
Right.
And if kids aren't, I mean, they're seeing that too. You know, yeah, you're not arguing. Wonderful. But you're not speaking to each other,
right?
Okay,
right.
You simply can't cover it up,
right? Right. And so, another thing before we kind of get into how do we deal with this, another thing that I think is important to mention is that, okay, so you have agreed that you're going to stay together until the kids are graduate high school.
Okay.
Okay. What happens then is there are things that get lost. Mm-hmm. There are things, and I'll use a specific example to illustrate my point, but there are details that are missed. So the kid is growing up. Say that the kid is interested in, the kid's going to go to college. So he graduates high school, and then the parents divorce when he gets out of high school. Mm-hmm. And so the kid is going to be going to college when he's, you know, in August, after he graduates in June.
Right.
The turmoil that is created when parents then go for the divorce starts to take center stage.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of the obligations, all of the things that the kid needs to have put into place to prepare for a healthy transition to college then is lost.
So that summer, instead of getting ready for college, the teenager, the boy, the girl or boy, is thinking, I have two and a half months to get ready for college.
Right.
I have to shop, and I have to do this, and I have to get this, and I have a new roommate, and I have a new city, and I have all this new stuff going on. So my whole summer is going to be taken up with getting ready for this next part of my life.
Right.
In the meantime, he's got this drama going on in the house, which is going to take precedence.
Right. And so, so the kid goes to college, and where's your financial aid? Oh, well, mom was going to take care of that. So you get in touch with mom. Oh, I forgot because it is. I had a meeting with the attorney. And so all of these little details are at risk for getting lost, not because of disinterest, but because the tension has been building for so long.
Right.
And, you know, whether the parents in these situations admit it or not, you know, as April, May, and June approach,
right.
They see the finish line.
Mm-hmm.
They see graduation as that's the end.
Right.
And so the focus shifts to that's all I got to make it to. And so some of these details begin to be lost.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, another risk that I think are often that is often not even considered are the effects that happen after the kids grow up.
Right.
You know, after they leave the home, you know, there are still issues and problems that arise. So let's, with all of that in mind, let's shift and talk a little bit about what parents can do to figure out what their best solution is.
Right.
Okay. As we said a moment ago, thinking about this stuff is important. You know, we don't. I try not to encourage anybody to impulsively in the relationship.
Right.
Unless there's abuse, unless there's some of those kinds of factors, safety is of issue. Barring something like that, you know, I try to encourage people to be thoughtful and to, you know, consider their decision before they jump the gun.
Yeah, divorce, if you've never been through a divorce, you just don't realize how difficult it is.
Right.
It's a wrenching experience.
And when you have children, it's even more.
Right.
More
and you
so.
Just you need to think about it very, very carefully. All the implications, what it's going to do to you, what it's going to do to your spouse, and what it's going to do to the children.
Right.
So think long and hard.
Right. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we do, like here in our office, right, is we have a system set up for what we just call pre-divorce counseling.
Right.
And so
right,
we have the parents come in, and we work with them to help them make sure that not only is this the decision that you need to make.
Is this what you really want to do?
Right. Are the issues that are contributing to this consideration really
right,
something that we can't...
Is it worth separating over?
Right.
This is going to be so difficult that let's make absolutely sure that this is really the only option left.
Right.
Okay. So let's consider all the other options, and let's make sure that it's really worth what you're going to have to go through.
Right. Or are these issues that we can resolve?
Yeah.
With a little bit of counseling, can we get through them?
Right.
So pre-divorce counseling or just marriage counseling in general is a very effective way to take some of these things into consideration,
right,
and really determine that this is the right choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The other thing, to go along with that, I think, is counseling for the kids.
Right.
Again, I'm going to go back to the fact that the kids know that there's problems.
Right.
And to pretend that they don't, mm-hmm, I think, is being naive, because kids know. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a troubled relationship, you should do the best that you can to get your kids in to see somebody and talk with them and help figure out what kind of effect, not if it's having an effect on them, because that's what parents say when they come in, but
right,
what is the effect
that's
that it's
right,
having
don't,
on them?
Don't ask if, ask
right,
in what way or
right,
ways. Yeah.
Because it is having an effect on them.
Absolutely.
And
you're not going to avoid it.
Right. And it sounds paradoxical to say this, but don't listen to the kids, because if you ask them, oh no, it doesn't bother
I'm
me.
I'm fine. Everything's
I'm
cool.
fine. They're going to say that, but you know, I keep using the word invariably, but
right,
when the kids come in,
yeah,
after a session or two, we start getting to it.
Right.
We start figuring it out.
Right.
And then the work begins. Then, mm-hmm, then we can help deal with it.
Right.
Because again, being very direct and honest and open about it,
mm-hmm,
sometimes divorce is the best answer.
Right.
And so...
Or the only answer left.
Right.
You know, and that,
right,
that's what you have to get to. If it becomes the only answer left, then that's okay. Then let's proceed. But
right,
let's proceed in an orderly
yeah,
way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And do it in a way that's going to have the least disruption.
Right.
And so... Having the child in therapy is going to help them prepare for it, because then we can talk about it, we can discuss what it means. And the pre-divorce counseling sessions that we do here, we try to help not just prepare the child, but prepare the adults and prepare the parents, because this is, as we said earlier, it's a pretty significant shift.
It's a big, yes, it's a huge decision, lots of implications.
Right, right. So there are healthy ways to end relationships. And maybe, you know, as we're kind of getting down on time here, maybe we should consider next week talking about how to have a healthy divorce.
Right.
Because there, it
you
absolutely
can do
is,
it. I mean,
is possible.
It can be done. It does not, there are many reasons for it to become adversarial.
Right.
But knowing that those pitfalls are out there,
right,
you know, if you can anticipate what they are, it makes it easier to deal with them. You know, our Jewish friends have a process for uncoupling.
Right.
You know, they meet with it. We have pre-Cana conference in some
Catholicism
churches, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you have instructions prior to marriage. But of course, the assumption in the Catholic Church is there is no divorce.
Right.
I mean, so yes, they only talk about this is how you get married. our Jewish brothers and sisters have this wisdom
right.
built into their religion, and they have come up with a way not only to prepare you for marriage, but if they acknowledge that marriages fall apart, and let's do it in an orderly way. So there are ways to divorce without anger, without anguish,
right.
without, it doesn't have to be that way.
Right.
But you got to prepare for it.
Right. And I think that, I mean, that's certainly a good point that, that pre-marriage counseling,
right.
pre-marriage sessions is equally important as pre-divorce counseling
right.
and sessions because for that exact reason, you know, we believe, you know, despite sort of some of our upbringing and the way that we grew up individually, Richard and I, we believe that that divorce sometimes has to happen,
right.
and that divorce sometimes is the last possible, last viable.
Yeah, it's the only option left. You know, you hate to call it the best option.
Right.
You know, but it's the only option remaining. You've pursued all the others. You've investigated everything else. And this is the only option left.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that anyone's to blame.
Exactly.
You know, when you consider, and I think this is tough for people sometimes, but when you consider the fact that if you're together for 20 years, if you're with someone for 20 years... Hmm. Just think about how much you as an individual changes in 20 years.
Right.
You know, if you're going to school and your partner's not, if your partner's going to school and you're not, if you're working and your partner's
right.
not,
mm-hmm.
If you guys are working in different places, all of these factors lead us down a different developmental life.
They create differences, right.
Mm-hmm. And so... we can't help but become different people. And sometimes we become different enough to where we're not compatible and we have those general incompatibility that we talked about earlier. It happens. And what I always sort of that uncomfortable that I get is when people recognize that some of that happens, but then they say, well, I'm just going to put that on the back burner for the kids, and I'm just going to stay. I'm really unhappy. I'm not really satisfied with my marriage and my life right now, and I'm going to stay together for the kids. I think that creates the risk for more problems down the line. You know, I've never really met anybody who decided that they were going to stay together for the kids mm-hmm. and then ended up having a healthy divorce.
Right.
Usually the divorce is much more... adversarial at that point because
resentment
and right. I've had to tolerate it for so long.
Now
it's really angry.
Right. And you would have been better off doing it earlier before
Absolutely.
The resentment built.
Absolutely. Right. So to manage this, you know, the two pieces I think, or three pieces I think that need to be considered is first, you need to sort of let go of the idea that staying together is the best thing no matter what.
That's right.
We have to sort of abandon that idea. Not saying just jump into a divorce without considering, not saying that in any way, but we need to say, or we need to sort of release that idea that if I don't stay together, that's going to be damaging. Because
right.
many times staying together is more damaging.
That's right. So the answer is a yes, you know, should I stay together for the children? Yes, but...
Right.
And then there's all these conditions that we
right.
want to attach to that. Yes. Yes, it's better, but only if you can make these things happen.
Right. 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 Mm-hmm. The second thing to consider is if you're at a point where you're even thinking about this, mm-hmm. seek some support. Seek some therapy. Talk to a professional.
What I tell the couples that I see is if you stay together, you're going to have to do... a lot of really hard work.
Right.
If you get separated and divorced, you're going to have to do a lot of really hard work. It doesn't matter whether you stay together or get divorced. Each of them is going to be very, very difficult.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, please don't convince yourself that one is going to be easier. They're both, each is going to be difficult.
Though for different reasons.
And you're going to have to do a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I would always advise you, get some professional help.
Right.
It's going to be difficult. We've been through this dozens or hundreds of times. We know where the We know where the hot spots are. We know right. where the lightning rods are. And you can we can help you to prepare for those things. It's still going to be difficult, but it can be made a little bit easier.
Right. And I'm going to... I might ruffle feathers again. Ooh. This is the second time.
You don't typically...
Be careful. I know. Be careful who you seek help from. And the reason that I say that is because there... There are professionals that you will go talk to who will say, nope, you need to stay together no matter what.
That's right.
And
it's not our decision about whether you stay together. Or
right.
not.
It is not a therapist or a counselor's decision. Or, we're not living your life.
That's right. That's
and
right.
so we're here to help you, help make sure that you're considering mm-hmm. all of the factors that you need to consider.
That's all we do. Make sure you have all the, that's all we should be doing. Let's make sure you have all the information that you need to make your decision. But it has to be your decision. And no therapist should tell you, this is what you should do.
Right.
They should tell you, you can do this or you can do this. I'll get whatever information I can.
Right.
But it has to be their decision.
Right. You know, when I have individuals who come in with these kinds of issues, that's exactly what I do. Is I say, you know, let's talk about where you are with it, mm-hmm. and I will recommend things to consider, things to think about. Go home, and over the next week, think about this, or consider that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to tell you to file. I'm not going to, if you ask me, do you know a good divorce attorney? I'll tell you a good divorce right. attorney. Mm-hmm. But if your spouse came in here and asked me, can you tell me a good divorce attorney? I would tell him or her a good divorce attorney as well, right. Because I'm here to help and support. I'm not here to tell you how to live your life.
Right.
And so be cautious when you are seeking some of that support, that you're not restricting yourself to a person who is going to try to direct how you live your life to the point where you're not going to make some decisions on your own.
And remember that you know many of us consult with our pastors or other clergymen. And if a clergyman says, no, you can't get divorced, the clergyman isn't wrong because they're just saying from a religious
right.
perspective,
right.
no, you shouldn't. But remember that religion is one of the decisions you have to make. Now, if you want to make your decision based on religious belief, that's okay. But that's your decision.
Right.
Okay. But remember that a clergyman who's saying, no, you have to stay married is saying strictly from a religious standpoint.
Right.
But if you're being abused, you ought to also be considering that
right.
as a reason to stay together or not.
Right.
Okay? So consider all the factors. Religion is one, but there are other factors that you need to consider, that each of us needs to consider.
Right, right. And if the advice you're getting says, no, you need to stay together, whether it's from a religious perspective or whatever, that doesn't mean that you don't get help. You know, getting marriage counseling and those kinds of things is really important to make sure that you're still going to be unhappy. Even if your pastor or priest is telling you, no, you have to stay together, mm-hmm. you're still going to be unhappy, and that still needs to be addressed.
Right.
The third piece is the support for the kid.
Right.
Again, there's no doubt that they understand what's going on, they sense what is going on. They sense the stress, they sense the tension, they can feel the uncomfortable frustration in the home. So getting them some support is going to be really important.
Right.
We can't leave them out. We can't, again, assume that, oh, well, it's not affecting them because we don't really talk about it when he's around.
Mm-hmm.
So many times parents come in and say, I've talked to dads and he's like, you know, they say things like, well, I know his mom's telling him about it because, right. you know, he came to my house and he said X, Y, Z, or we were riding the car the other day and he said X. And just because the kid knows that doesn't mean that the other parent told him that, you know,
right.
we
assume that. Yeah.
We assume it's just baffling to me how we sort of, and I keep saying put blinders on again, we resist looking at reality.
Right.
If you're on the phone in the living room and your kid is in his bedroom, that doesn't mean he can't hear you.
Right.
If you take the phone and go outside, that doesn't mean he can't hear you. Right. You're doing your best to stay away, But it doesn't mean he doesn't hear you. So, you know, let's resist that idea that we are able to keep it so separated. Now, I'm not saying go out and tell your kids everything. I'm not certainly not saying that. But let's also not be disillusioned that you're able to keep everything away from them.
Right, right. Yeah, one of the places where you could really use, where every child, I think, of divorce could use help is they always seek an explanation of why the divorce occurred. And if you ask the mother, she will have her explanation. And if you ask the father, he will have his explanation. They're different. It's not that one is true and one is not true. But remember that your children are looking for the truth. Kids don't realize that there can be two truths. Okay? They're just not of that age. Until they get to their teenage years, they don't realize that both of my parents might be telling me the truth. Because they're looking for the parent. They're looking for who's telling them the truth. Not realizing that both parents are telling their truth. Okay? And so they might choose a parent thinking, I believe my mother. That makes my father a liar. No, your father's not a liar. He simply has a different truth. That's where kids can have, that's where we can be helpful with children.
Absolutely. And I think that's something we have to mention when we do healthy divorce next week, is that we have to understand that. So all right. I think that is that I think that's everything. It. So think about these things. About these things. You know, I know that there's a lot of people listening that are struggling with those kinds of issues. They're struggling with those decisions. They're trying to figure out what they're going to do. What is the best decision? And
it's a tough one. It's a tough decision because most parents, I mean, we all want to take care of our kids, you know, one way or the other.
We all want to make the decision that's going to be in their best interest.
But it's a complicated decision, lots of pieces. They're always moving. So be very careful.
Absolutely. So, all right. Well, I think that's it. If you have the opportunity, jump onto iTunes and, you know, give us a rating, give us a review. We'd love to hear from you.
Love to have your opinion about this one.
It increases our visibility on iTunes so that other people can get involved. And if you are listening to this on iTunes and you are interested in listening to us live so that you can chat in with us during the podcast, check out our Mixlr page, mixlr.com/TheMentalBreakdown. And you can find us there and listen to us live at 8 o'clock.
In the morning.
On Friday mornings, because we were actually on time today. I'm really excited about that. I'm still happy about that. So, all right. I think that's everything. Check us out on Facebook and our blog and all kinds of stuff. We got some good stuff coming up that we'll be able to announce pretty soon. So, a new book. But shh, don't tell anybody. So, all right. Until next time, I'm Dr. Bernie.
And I'm Dr. Richard.
Have a great week and forget to be afraid.